Welcome to the Economics Explored podcast. I'm your host, Gene Tunney. I'm a professional economist based in Brisbane, Australia, and I'm a former Australian Treasury official. This is episode 85 on business cases for public infrastructure projects. In this episode, I talk about a business case process that I've been involved in here in Australia for a major water infrastructure project. And I'm speaking with returning guest Tim Hughes, who's a Brisbane-based businessman, and he's also recently joined my business Adept Economics to help out with business development. So I hope you enjoy our conversation. Tim Hughes, welcome back onto the program.
Gene Tunney, good to be here.
Excellent, Tim. Tim, I thought it'd be good for us to chat about business cases and feasibility studies today. So the context is, of course, that you're working with me now in my business, Adept Economics, and you're going to be helping me with developing the business.
Yeah, looking to drum up some new work from different areas, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, one of the major things that I do as an economist, it's working with clients, and it's working on their projects, like often developing business cases or doing feasibility studies of those projects.
Yeah.
And I thought that this could be a good topic to talk about. I think we've probably covered it a little bit before in that session we had on what economists do, but I thought we could have a deeper chat into what's really meant by a business case and what's involved and exactly what economists do in that. And I'm hoping that if you're listening in the audience, I hope this is of interest to you because I think the framework that we've got here in Australia, I think, is a good framework for business cases, particularly those that are developed for government agencies, so big infrastructure projects, business cases for them.
Yeah.
And I think the framework that we've got here that is specified by Infrastructure Australia, which is the National Infrastructure Advisory Body, or Building Queensland, which has been doing a similar job here in Queensland, the state that we're in, I think they're actually quite good frameworks, and I thought we could talk about that, and I could talk about this business case process that I've been involved in up in Bundaberg in regional Queensland.
So is this the Paradise Dam project?
Exactly.
Yeah, cool.
So the Paradise Dam project in Bundaberg. So Bundaberg is an important regional centre in Queensland. Lots of agriculture there. So sugarcane traditionally, increasingly now tree crops such as macadamias and avocados, and also citrus and so fruit and veg. And it's great because you can grow all year round in Bundaberg. So
yeah, we were up there last year for the first time. It's an amazing area, like very fertile. We were around Bagara, and it was a lovely place. So we had a great time up there.
Yeah, and Bagara is a beachside suburb, isn't it? And
it is, yeah, and remarkably close to all of the different crops that get grown round about. Like, you know, you just 30 seconds out of town and you're in the I think it was sugar cane and all sorts of different things.
Yeah, you definitely drive past some cane fields. I mean, we're sort of exaggerating with 30 seconds out of 10.
I was driving pretty quickly. No, it's just right. Like, there's a Woolies on the outskirts of town, and then it's these fields. It's there were strawberries, and it was lovely.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not far. It's just a bit south of Monrepeau Beach, which is the famous beach.
Yep.
Well, we have the turtles are there, and also that's where Bert Hinkler, the famous aviator who hailed from Bundaberg, that's where he tested his gliders. And
we went to those beaches and it was unfortunately the wrong time of year for turtles. So we'll have to go back when it's hatching season because they do it very well. It was really impressive to see the whole setup they had there for the, for people to go and able to see the turtles without disrupting them. So the approach was really well done, and there's a really good center up there to educate you on what the whole process looks like.
Oh, great. I'll have to check that out next time I'm there. I haven't been to that center yet.
And we got to the Bert Hinkler Museum, and I was keen to go in, but I was the only one in the car who was keen to do it. But next time.
Next time. Okay. Right. So I guess I could provide some background to start with on Paradise Dam. So this is a major dam that they built up there for irrigation, which was meant to provide water for irrigators. And a couple of years ago, they discovered that there were some issues with the foundations of the dam, or there were issues when it was constructed. And no allegations of negligence or anything. As an economist, I've sort of looked at the economic issues. I haven't looked at the engineering issues, but I understand that there are engineering issues with the dam, which have meant that for safety reasons, the government owns a water business called Sunwater, and Sunwater has all of these dams across Queensland for irrigation schemes. Sunwater, as the dam owner, it has had to lower the dam wall by 5 metres for safety reasons, because so the higher the dam wall, the more water potentially is stored behind it, greater pressure on the wall, and there's the potential for a dam failure.
How old is the dam? When was it built?
The dam was built in the mid-2000s.
So it's not too old.
No, so that's why it's really an issue that probably should have been picked up early on. It shouldn't have happened. Like there shouldn't have been this problem with the dam, but unfortunately there is, and the government has had to lower the dam as an emergency measure, and this is, of course, of great concern to people in the region, the irrigators who were counting on that water being available in the future.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so and just out of interest then, is that with a view to then strengthen it and rebuild it to its previous height?
So that's what this business case process is about. So this is what I've been involved in. So and the reason they have to do a business case, the reason there's all this analysis going on, and you've got engineers and you've got economists involved in this process, is that, it will require a substantial amount of money.
Yeah.
So I don't think they've presented a firm cost estimate yet, but, I mean, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars to repair the dam. So it's enough of a potential expenditure that it triggers this detailed business case process that Building Queensland, so it oversees infrastructure decision-making in Queensland.
Yeah.
And because Sunwater is a government-owned corporation, it has to go through this process, because it's part of the public sector. It's taxpayers ultimately. Well, they own Sunwater. The Queensland taxpayers own Sunwater.
And the knock-on effects of that water not being available is obviously very important to the region and the produce coming from that region.
Yep. So that's one of the things. That's how I got involved in this whole process. So toward the end of 2019, I was engaged by Bundaberg Regional Council. So I've been doing this work with Nick Behrens, who's a colleague of mine, and by the cane growers and Bundaberg Fruit and Veg and the macadamia industry group. And one of the other regional growth bodies up there. I'll put the link in the show notes to the report we did. We looked at what would be the loss to the community of not repairing the dam. So what investment in new tree crops, so macadamias or avocados, what could you lose? What's at stake? How many dollars are at stake? How many jobs? That sort of thing. So that's the sort of thing that we that we looked at. Like, how important is this dam for the region?
Yeah, right.
And so we prepared an estimate of that, and we said, well, we think that the cost to the region of not repairing it, or the benefits of to the region if you did repair it, I mean, you're talking over $2 billion of benefits to the region if you did.
Over what period of time?
Over 30 years.
Okay.
Yeah, if I remember how our period of analysis was, yeah. So we're looking at, well, how many additional hectares of different crops you would end up with, and then looking at, well, what's the value of those crops? So there's a concept in agricultural economics called the gross margin. So what you make on each, yeah, you know, each ton of
so
the commodity.
This is effectively a cost-to-benefit ratio or analysis.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what. Yeah, it was basically a cost-benefit analysis, and that's an important part of a business case. Although we had the benefits, but because we were doing this work for the Bundaberg community, and we didn't have the engineers that Sunwater has that would know, that would be estimating what the costs of these different options to repair the dam would be.
That $200 million is just a ballpark figure then?
Oh, the $2 billion benefit figure we came up with.
Sorry, did you mention earlier about $200 million to
fix it? It could be even more. I mean, yeah, hundreds of millions.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably possibly more than that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yes, you'd have to compare the, you'd have to look at that cost and then subtract it from the benefits estimate to work out the net benefit.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's so we prepared that report. At the same time, Building Queensland, they had their own consultant, NC Economics, and that's the team was headed by a former colleague of mine, Jim Binney, who I worked with at Mars and Jacob, and they were doing their own analysis for Building Queensland. They did an initial service needs assessment and an options assessment. Building Queensland had this options assessment. They're looking at, okay, well, what are the different options in this case to meet the service needs of the community? And they narrowed it down to a few different options based on Jim's analysis, and one of them was repairing the dam. There are some other options. One relates to, well, you could just leave the dam below at -5 meters. That would just be the status quo as it is now.
Yeah.
That's one option. Now, that's going to be one that they compare with repairing it. So you've got to work out, does it stack up going from -5 meters back to full capacity? And there are some other options. I think one of the other options is, well, possibly you could do some work in other parts of the irrigation scheme. You might be able to increase the size of some other storages or weirs elsewhere in the scheme. And so that's one thing they're looking at. So you've got a range of options that they'll be, you know, crunching the numbers on.
Well, one of the hardest things, of course, and most controversial things with any kind of dam or, you know, a new body of water anywhere is that the land has to be taken from somewhere or someone in that particular spot. So I guess with the dam that's already there, that they've already got that land that allows for the 5 meters in height. So they would have already, that's already secure, I imagine. So in that regard, it's easier because wherever else any other body of water goes, then no doubt somebody's using that land currently.
Exactly. Like, without going into specifics of this project, because, I mean, they're all, there are environmental issues you have to take into account. So potentially those other options, yes, you would have to explore the environmental issues, and the path of least resistance may well be to just restore the dam. I mean, that's a good point. There'd have to be analysis of that, I would say. That's an important thing to analyse in these business cases. You want to look at any impacts on the environment that could occur from the proposal, and look at what are the regulatory hurdles, because some things are more difficult than others to get up.
Yeah. I mean, out of interest, and like this isn't necessarily an area to go in, but I can't help but be curious about it. It's on the coast, Bundaberg. So desalination plants, are they are they an option, or is that just not cost effective?
Generally, it wouldn't be cost effective for irrigation water. Yeah. Desal is a very expensive option.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So you wouldn't really. You only do desalination when you don't have any other options, I think, and you are really worried about your community running out of water.
Yeah.
So that's why they'll have it over in WA, where they've had, I don't know if you're aware of this, but WA has had this huge drop in average rainfall over the last 30 or 40 years.
No, I wasn't aware.
Yeah, yeah. So they've got big problems with water over there.
So it's beyond the normal cycles of
the
normal weather cycles.
The weather, yeah, just changed. The patterns just changed. I don't know if it's related to climate change, but they from the 70s or 80s, they've ended up with much less water than they had in the decades before, which led to, I mean, people live in Perth. Perth's a pretty big city.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So there would have been people who, they would have got used to a certain amount of water, and that's encouraged development in Perth, and it's no longer there. So I think they've got 3 desalination plants in Perth. We've got one here in Queensland because we had that water crisis back in the 2000s, and we were concerned about running out of water here. But it's just a very high-cost option for generating water because there's a lot of electricity involved in desalination.
It's hugely controversial as well. I mean, just looking at the Murray-Darling Basin and what's happened around there with the agriculture and now that whole river system being completely affected by, the events of the last few decades. And you can see that the knock-on effects of any kind of mismanagement or, diversion and messing with natural waterways. So it's a huge issue. Be interested to see how it goes with the Paradise Dam.
Yes, well, we're part of this process at the moment. So I guess going back to, before I go back to the process I'm involved in, I should mention with the dams, like if you're proposing a new dam and you are having to flood a valley to create that dam, then yes, that potentially does raise environmental issues. And this was what happened with the dam that my best friend at the time, Tony Hand, who ran the Brisbane office of Marsden Jacob and who brought me back to Brisbane. So the reason I came back to Brisbane, I was working in Treasury in Canberra, in Australian Treasury, and I'd visit every now and then, and I caught up with Tony one weekend and we just sort of worked out I'd come back and work with Tony on his economic consulting projects. And at the time he was doing a lot of work on water, and he did the cost-benefit analysis for Traveston Dam. I don't know if you remember Traveston Dam many years ago.
It might have been before my time.
That was the one they were going to build on the Mary River.
Oh, yeah. Well, I knew about the Mary River because I know that was – I mean, that didn't go ahead, did it?
No.
So I didn't realize – because there was a Traveston Dam in place, is there not?
No, there's no Traveston Dam.
No, there you go.
the state government was proposing to build it because it would have been a new dam to provide water to southeast Queensland. And dams are, I think they're much cheaper than desalination is an option.
Yeah.
And that, yeah.
So I know of it then. It's funny, I hadn't connected the two because I know of the Mary River and the controversy around, that being put in or not, but I didn't realise that was going to be called the Traveston Dam. So I've heard the two mentioned. But, because we've got relatives up in that part, near Pomona, beautiful part of the world. And so not too far from there is that whole region. And it's beautiful. And you can understand anyone who's living there. It's very hard to be displaced from anywhere for anybody. Clearly, as the population grows, it's going to be harder and harder to find these areas that are suitable, because of course there are only a few suitable areas geographically for these things to happen.
I think what that Traveston case showed was that it's going to be impossible to build a new dam within southeast Queensland
because of the population growth.
Because of the environmental issues, I think.
Yeah,
we're just as a community, we're just so much more conscious of environmental damaged than we have ever been, than we were in the past. And so what stopped Traveston, if you remember, even though it passed the cost-benefit analysis test, so Tony and his colleague Peter Jacob, who was the Jacob in Marsden Jacob, managing director of Marsden Jacob, they did the economic analysis of Traveston, showing that, okay, it stacks up based on the data and the assumptions that that were made. And it turns out that when it goes for the federal environmental approval by Peter Garrett, ex-Midnight Oil frontman.
Yeah, for sure.
There was a lungfish. I don't know if you remember the lungfish, and there was a concern about the lungfish being endangered. And so they just said, nope, can't build the dam.
These are the little guys who can live under land, like sort of suspended animation until it rains, and then they pop out and do their thing. Is that a lungfish?
I think so. Yes, yeah.
Or did I dream that? What?
We'll put a link in the show notes.
So I know of them.
People aren't confused, just in case you're causing confusion.
But I'm a conservationist at heart, so I'm totally behind that. But I know that, for practical reasons, and, as the population grows, which it is doing, that it becomes more and more important as to where the water comes from and how much there is to go around. So it becomes a more and more complex process, I guess.
It does, and it just... Yes, it is more complex, and there are so many more things to consider today if you're trying to get a project up. And I guess this is why this detailed business case approach, like thinking about the whole business case and all the different elements of it, what Building Queensland and Infrastructure Australia here in Australia force people to do, you've got to think about all of those considerations. So you've got to think about, okay, well, what are the different options? So let's not just go straight to the solution. Let's think about what the different options are, come up with different options, figure out that there's actually a need, a demand for it, then work out whether it stacks up. Well, even if there is a demand for it, even if people would use it or irrigators would use the water or people would drive on the new motorway or use the bridge or the tunnel, does it make sense to build it? Does it stack up?
Yeah.
Do the benefits, however we value them with the dam, with irrigation dams, we can certainly value the additional crops, economic value of that.
Yeah.
With a motorway, we could value, well, how much time does it save? Make an assumption what somebody's time is worth in dollars per hours, and what's that going to mean in terms of dollars? Does that justify spending however many hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollars on this new motorway?
So regionally, that's really important too then, depending on, I guess that's where the regional areas can struggle in certain ways because there are fewer people around, fewer people using the road. So that would affect all of those sort of calculations, I guess.
Yeah, so when you're doing your cost-benefit analysis, you've got to have a good idea of what's the likely use of the bit of infrastructure. So how many drivers or how many commuters or what's the volume of water that will be demanded from the dam. So that's the issue with Paradise Dam. So I've been brought into this process. I was invited to attend these industry or these irrigator forum meetings and this working group meetings on this detailed business case because I did this work for the council and regional groups.
Yeah.
And at the same time, Building Queensland, they had NC Economics do a study of the options, and their study was a lot more pessimistic than the one I did. I mean, mine was very positive about the dam because what we've seen in the last several years in Bundaberg is just this massive investment in macadamias and avocados, so much higher value crops, and they're tree crops, so you've got to make sure you've got the water because if you have a year where you don't have any water, then the trees could die off. So if you're going to plant those, you want to make sure you've got a very reliable source of water, and Paradise Dam was seen, that's been seen as that reliable source.
It's interesting, because it also entails then good agricultural practice as well to make sure that, you know, that's been optimized to the point where there's very little wastage or as little wastage as possible, which must be very difficult, I'm sure. But so I don't know if there's any new advances in managing the water in that process of growing avocados or whatever the crop may be.
Tim, I think you'd be amazed if you went on to a modern farm. I mean, the extent to which they are applying, you know, efficient irrigation techniques.
Because that's the other side of the coin, isn't it? Like, you know, the getting the most use out of the water that is available. That'd be really interesting.
I think that
in practice.
Yeah, I think modern agriculture is incredibly. It's a lot more advanced, and they are economizing because with agriculture, you've got your good years and your bad years, and you're often trying to make money by, like, sometimes the margins can be tiny, you've really got to keep your costs down to make a living out of it.
Yeah, I mean, traditionally it's always been a tough industry to get any kind of continuity because of the subject to the weather, of course.
Oh, exactly. I guess the thing with the macadamias and avocados, they're in demand crops, and so there's been a lot of investment, thousands of hectares of investment there, and many more projected. So originally NC Economics, its assumptions were that there would be growth in macadamias and avocados, but most of it or all of it in their initial analysis would come from that you would lose sugarcane land, so people would switch from sugarcane to macadamias, and so because they're all, those irrigators were using water to irrigate their sugarcane. If you go to macadamias, there is a jump in the amount of water required, but it's not as much as if you go to like a greenfield site. And so the original analysis that NC Economics did, there wasn't a large growth in demand for water in their study, whereas what we were arguing was that, well, we think based on our conversations with growers and our survey that we conducted and what we've seen, the data we've seen, we think that it's going to be the case that there will be this large increase in demand for water, and therefore there's a high cost if you don't repair the dam.
And I guess all of this, like, you know, with looking at a 30-year sort of 30 years into the future for the benefits, for instance, you can only do your best guess at this time because obviously, you know, crops do change. Farmers do change their, you know, depending on the yield and the cost, and one may go up and down as to what they may change their crop to. So it's all sort of like best estimates, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, and so that's why what you typically do is a sensitivity analysis, and this is what in the latest round of projections by NC Economics. So they were engaged for a second round of work on Paradise Dam, and this is the work that I've been seeing because I've been part of this industry group or this industry, the Irrigators Forum and the working group on the assumptions for the economic modelling. So I've been seeing it, and it's looking pretty good what they've been doing, because they've had a process, and this is part of this Building Queensland framework, which I'll try and elaborate on a bit more later. But you're required to consult with stakeholders. There's an idea that, well, you've got to talk to people in the community, you've got to find out what's going on, you can't just do this thing remotely. And so, like, when I did my project on Paradise, I went up to the region and we talked to growers and people in the community. And so NC Economics, Jim Binney, he's been doing the same thing.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. And so he's used that to inform his assumptions, and his latest set of estimates for future water demand is looking a lot more realistic. I mean, I still need to look at the assumptions and delve into it, But that process really appears to have helped get some more realistic estimates of water demand, because basically they're trying to work out, will there be enough demand for water from all these additional crops being planted for the irrigators, the farmers, to buy the water rights from the dam? Is that, does, will there be enough demand for water to justify raising the dam back to its full capacity?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be hard to. I mean, if the space is there and the room is there, and even with the expense, I mean, this is just my penny's worth, because I guess you can only imagine that we're going to need the water is always going to be a very valuable commodity, but especially going into the future with whatever may come, you know, if there are the effects of climate change which are widely predicted, or from weather patterns, whatever it may be. Nobody suffered from having more water, you know, safely stored. I would imagine that would be preferable.
Yeah,
I'm not commenting because I know this is still in progress. Yeah, so I'm not commenting as a representative of ADEPT, but just personally, you can only imagine that. Yeah, it would be good to have that capacity 5 meters higher if it was possible.
Yeah. So the analysis and the modelling that's been undertaken, and this is an important point about business cases. This is something that Building Queensland Infrastructure Australia will recommend. You need to do the modelling. You need to crunch the numbers.
Yeah.
You need to work out, well, what's the trend in demand, and what is it? You know, how valuable is that? And climate change is something that can affect that demand. And from what I've seen, it looks like NC Economics, they are taking into account the impact of climate change.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of analysis that's been done of how climate change will affect rainfall, how it will affect peak temperatures. And from what I remember, I think it may not impact rainfall that much in the region, but it will certainly increase peak temperatures, and that will have some implications for, it'll affect the rate of evaporation, so it'll mean you probably have to put a bit more water onto the crops.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but certainly something to take into account. That's basically how I've been got involved in it, because I did that initial work for Bundaberg Council, and then I was invited into this to attend these meetings, and so I've been keeping an eye on this business case process and how it's played out, and it's involved. Yes, essentially, consulting with locals, with stakeholders, and they had a survey that was run. And now they've done analysis, they've done some number crunching based on the assumptions that they've developed from looking at, also they've looked at GIS data, so geographical information system data. They've looked at how the crops have changed in the in the region, because they've got satellite data. I think it's from satellites that they get the imagery of the region. And there have been some academics at UNE, I think it was, who identified, okay, that they're the macadamia hectares, and this is how many more macadamia hectares we've got in the last few years. So there's that sort of analysis that feeds into it. It's quite impressive, just all the analytical firepower that's being deployed.
It's incredible. It's like it's good seeing how new technology is helping make all of those systems more efficient.
Yeah. And so eventually this will – so there will be a detailed business case report in which Building Queensland analyses all the different options to do with the dam and reports on the costs and benefits of them.
Yeah, okay.
And that's going to be informed by Jim's work on water demand. It will be informed by work by engineers on what other options could be and what they will cost. Typically, you need engineers to tell you what the actual options are, what actually has to happen, because they're good at that. They know what needs to be done, and they will have an idea of what these things will cost. And so you'll try and develop a really good cost estimate for these options.
Big project.
Well, this has taken. Well, how long has it taken so far? I think the issue with the dam became apparent. It would have been late 2018 or 2019. I'll have to put the – I can't remember off the top of my head, but the project I worked on started in late 2019 and we reported early 2020. And then I think I got the phone call from Sunwater, from one of the top guys at Sunwater, saying, oh, we'd like you involved in this process. I think it's part of that – I mean, it's part of consultation. It was a good thing they did. They want to make sure that anyone who is potentially, you know, could comment on their proposal or may have an alternative view, they want to make sure that they understand what that alternative view is before they publish something and then they learn about it. So I think it's good from that perspective, and I was happy to be involved in that.
Yeah, it's good. And it's also really interesting. I mean, like, there's so much involved in that kind of project, in that kind of review. So, yeah, it'd be really interesting to see how that unfolds.
Okay. So I might go to how Building Queensland defines a business case, then we might just go over that briefly.
Sure.
That story took me a lot longer to tell than I expected.
You're a natural storyteller, Gene.
You've got good questions, Tim. Very good.
Stop it.
What is a business case? A business case is a documented value proposal. It aligns with key government strategic objectives and is considered the core management and assurance tool to inform investment decisions that maximise value for taxpayer dollars and benefits for Queenslanders. So, I mean, if you're living in the States, that'd be benefits for Americans. You'd be talking about strategic objectives of your own government. So, like that. Those words could be adapted for whatever country. The objective of developing a robust service needs-centric business case is to ensure a resource allocation and decisions are well-timed, deliver value for money and are fit for purpose. Risks should be appropriately considered and managed to ensure investments are consistent with government priorities and objectives. A well-developed business case provides transparency of analysis to support investment decisions. So that's how they define a business case. So essentially, it's a comprehensive report looking at different options, determining whether they stack up. You could also call it a feasibility study. Is this project feasible? Does that make sense, Tim? Do you have any questions on that?
I guess it's a very wide-ranging, it covers so many different things. Because, I mean, I know you get involved in all sorts of different projects, and so it's broad in its sense, because no matter what you're going to be looking at is going to be, you know, you adapt that to what then whatever the needs are for that particular case. So for instance, with the Paradise Dam, I mean, that's a pretty big project as opposed to some other environmental impact or like economic impact analysis that you may do on certain projects that are going to be more smaller, or a development project from Toowoomba Regional Council had the railway goods shed. So that's going to be a different set of criteria, and somewhat more contained, no doubt.
And a different drivers of benefits and costs too. So I mean, with Paradise Dam, the drivers are the investment in crops, in new crops, and what does that mean for water demand and what's the value of that with the Toowoomba, with that project you mentioned, when I helped them with their application to get funding for repairing this old railway goods shed, it was, well, how many people could visit, how many visitors would they get to the goods shed?
Yeah, so it's a different scope, I guess, isn't it? Like the framework's there for, you know, it's a broad framework.
It's definitely a broad framework, because we're looking at demand and what drives demand.
Yeah.
How can we value that, applying some metric to value the, or some dollars of benefit per unit of whatever the driver is.
So every case is pretty unique, I guess, in that regard.
To an extent,
there'd be similarities, but there's always going to be unique parts of every single project.
Exactly. But
keeps it interesting.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Right. So that's broadly what a business case is, and I'll put links to this in the show notes if you're interested in looking at these documents. I think they're a very good summary of what needs to go into a business case. They talk about first doing a strategic assessment to identify potential ideas that could resolve the issues or develop the opportunity, evaluate whether any of the ideas have the potential to be viable options, and you do an options analysis in stage two. You narrow the breadth of options by applying rigorous evaluation criteria before assessing the viability of any remaining options. Okay, so that's don't jump straight away to the solution. Think about what your options are. There might be a cheaper option than your a more cost-effective option that will deliver the same, whatever it is. It will resolve the traffic issue, or it will deliver the same amount of water. It'll deliver the water you need at a lower cost.
So there's a bit of lateral thinking to be applied here at different times, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you need to think laterally. Yeah, that's right. So just don't jump to the solution. And then stage three, detailed business case to evaluate the viability of the highest ranked option / options with surety of outcomes across all evaluation criteria and develop investment implementation plans. Okay, so by the investment implementation plans, they're meaning that you've got to think about how this is delivered.
Yeah.
You've got to think about those regulatory issues. You've got to think about what governance structure you might put around this. How are you going to make sure that these benefits end up actually occurring? That, yeah, this thing's actually delivers. It's built got to on stack time. Up. Exactly. Yeah.
No, it looks good. It's always interesting to sort of see the different things that you get involved in. It's fascinating to see what comes through.
Okay. Right. Anything else, Tim?
I think that's it. You've done a pretty good job there, Gene. I think that's fairly succinct.
Okay. Very good. Well, thanks, Tim. Really enjoyed that chat, and it was a good excuse for me to try to get my thoughts in order on business cases and talk about some of the interesting work that I've been doing lately. So I really appreciated that the ability to do that.
No problem at all, and it's given me a good insight into what this is all about.
Good stuff. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Gino.
Thanks for listening to the Economics Explored podcast. If you're enjoying it, please tell your family and friends. And please give us a rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or on whatever platform you're listening on. If you'd like to get in touch with any comments or to ask any questions, please email me at gene.tunney@gmail.com. Until next week, goodbye.